Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're not strong, I'll be your friend.
So I think that's the greatest song in the world.
It's fucking good.
I honestly, like, whenever I hear that song, I'm like, I can't think of a song that's literally more perfect than this song.
You know what might be up there for me? Is like a, maybe some Otis Redding.
Like which song?
Like either Sitting on the Dock of the Bay or Try a Little Tenderness or something. Those are pretty perfect.
Dock of the Bay is pretty. But see, those songs are like, they're like perfect. Sitting on the Dock of the Bay is pretty awesome.
But you know why that song is
but
awesome?
But Lean
too,
on is, Me is like a universal human anthem, though.
But did that movie not kind of change the song for
it
you?
It did kind of fuck like, it up. It did fuck it up.
I can't, like, I can't hear that song without picturing, like, Joe Clark's music teacher leading East Patterson High School in a rendition of Lean On Me. Like, that's how I know Lean On Me, you know? That's the only reason I know every lyric to that song is because of that movie.
Really?
100%.
I mean, I guess obviously I'm older than you, but like that song is like, yeah, I've been hearing that song on the radio since I was a kid, though.
Yeah. I mean, maybe your age, maybe from the country bumpkin living.
It wasn't on the charts when I was.
I'm saying, that's why I'm like.
I'm not that old.
My only other guess here is that since you grew up, it was maybe you had more church programming on the dials than I did growing up.
Not
so maybe
so
you had more Lean On Me's, more kind of diet Massachusetts main preachers.
No, it was more like top 40.
Come to Jesus.
No, there was none
That's what
of that.
They sounded like. No,
my dad would not tolerate that shit.
See, the more and more you spin this yarn about where you're from, it's just going farther in my head. You know?
You know that my dad is actually an ordained minister, though.
See? I called it. Wait, are we talking like actually did the thing or like the universalist life church?
No, he went to school for he like majored in like religion and archaeology, and that's why
no shit.
He ended up doing all these digs in Israel. He was kind of like a renowned like biblical archaeologist.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
A biblical archaeologist.
Yeah,
so he was going to Israel trying to find
not like
old
he wasn't
scrolls.
Yeah, well, sort of. He wasn't so much. It was more about the time period. Like he's not like a. He's actually not really very religious in terms of practicing.
Right.
Like we didn't go to church every Sunday or anything like that.
Okay.
But he never like, you know, he's ordained, but he never like had a church of his own. He used to sometimes fill in for the minister in our hometown.
Wow. But a faithful man.
Yeah. Yeah. But also like, he's kind of a hippie. Like he's like more liberal than me probably.
Wow. So can you remember like when you were a kid at any point? Some sort of like biblical archaeology, like not coming to your house, obviously, but your dad's like, yo, I found like...
I mean, that's the thing about archaeology is like, you know, it's not fucking... it's the most opposite from Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
you
know, I didn't think that was real.
Like, I mean, I remember like the biggest find that they ever found was this like piece of pottery, this broken pottery... And it was just a piece. It wasn't even a whole piece. And it was like, this shows that like such and such people were actually here during this time period, which is revelatory.
Right, right.
You know, like nobody, they didn't think that these people appeared here for 500 more years.
Yeah.
And like
that
was like out of the all the stuff that he did over the years, like this one little shard, as it was called. You know.
I love that shit too. It's like the more and more... you learn about that stuff, you do realize that just people were all over the world for fucking forever. You know what I mean? Even another, it's another check to take Columbus Day off from being anything since it's such a load of shit, is the fact that, have you ever heard about all the stuff they found in like Minnesota and that region, like all the Viking shit up there?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty obvious the Vikings were here like a thousand years before he was, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was...
You're probably part Viking,
there was a lot of people here. part Viking,
And just the simple fact, I mean, come on. How can you discover something people are on? Just the fundamental concept that we were raised with that. Like, what a, just a basic load of shit, you know? Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm going to have a tough time with that one if it's still around when my kids know what's up, you know? No. I have a niece who's really anti-Christopher Columbus. My stepbrother did a number on her, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. She's already up. She's already up for the fight.
It is ridiculous when you really know actual history.
I mean, they literally use that phrase. He discovered this land.
No, I know.
And then met people.
Oh, when like, I was, you know, my son's age.
What are you talking about?
When I was my son's age, that was the gospel. Christopher Columbus discovered America. End of story.
I know. And he didn't even land here, right? No. He Bahamas landed, or something?
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he didn't even make it. Fail.
Well, speaking of changing history, Tim Barry.
Did we just
always changing history? Huh?
Did we just change history with this podcast?
I mean, he actually did. I don't know if you know this about Tim, but he had taken an interest in, you know, Richmond history. You know, he's a bit of a historian and just likes to dig into the past. And, you know, he wrote a song about a slave named Gabriel Prosser who tried to lead a rebellion that ended up not working out. But Tim had basically discovered that the site where this happened was now a parking lot for Virginia Commonwealth University or something. And just that fundamental concept bothered him so much that, you know, he had this song and was very vocal about it, and it wound up leading to an actual change.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, they put something in place there. I think there's a plaque, there's like a lawn, some grass, like something to at least, you know, acknowledge the fact that this existed and it happened in this place. So Tim's fucking badass
you know? He's changed history. That's good.
Yeah.
How many of us have an actual physical monument that we can point to?
I know. And Tim is, you know, it's hard sometimes. Like, Tim's my friend now, which is rad. You know, I've known him a long time and I consider him one. But I spent a good part of my life with him just being like Tim Barrett, you know, like the dude.
Yeah.
And when I was thinking about it with this interview, I actually have like a weird series of events that has always kept like a veil in Tim, like super... Like, it's in so many stories in my narrative. Like, when I was, you know, in my first band, Dilemma, I played a house show in a church somewhere, opening for the band Oblivion from Chicago.
Right.
And I got a backpack stolen that night. The only things in the backpack, which illustrate the kind of kid I was at the time, was like 500 flyers for a show I was doing, a bottle of Joop cologne, which I was experimenting with. I don't know what it was doing in there. Listen, I was a chubby kid being raised by a woman who, you know, she tried hard, but I was literally hitting on girls while dousing myself in lilac body spray. I didn't know what I was doing.
It was all a mystery back then.
Yeah. But this backpack, the thing I was actually upset about was I had a lifetime patch and an Avail attempt to regress patch on this backpack. And that's what really bummed me out, was losing those patches I couldn't get back. And that was a crazy night. I was almost hit by a car. Long story. But then years later, you know, when I'm more into music, there was a show up in North Jersey. I think it was the only show they ever did at this place. It was a church in Paramus or Oradell, and they did a show with Avail, Chisel, Samuel, and the Van Pelt. And it was just like this loaded lineup and all bands that were just like above my local band tier, where like I was fucking blown away. And it stands as one of like my all-time favorite shows I've ever seen. And then, you know, skip again years and years later, because of a mutual friend, literally Tim Barry shows up to Gaslight's first show ever in Richmond. I'm talking at some fucking redneck bar, like on the other side. I think it was actually in the neighborhood Tim lived in. And we're playing there to literally six, seven people. And my boy Travis is there, and he brings Tim, who winds up being his best friend. And I had no idea. And so Tim was actually at like the first show.
Right.
And then he starts doing the solo stuff. He writes a song about the Motel 6 in East Brunswick in the land of no left turns where he's staying. This is the motel I used to stay when I was homeless after Gaslight tours. You know what I mean? He had a bucket of beer. I had an apple bowl and some pizza. That was about the only difference, though. So it's like, I just had this like series of events that have always led me super interconnected with with Tim and this mutual friend Travis we had, and you know, I don't know, I have so much admiration and respect for this guy that it's hard sometimes even when I'm having a friendly conversation to just be real, you know.
Right.
I hope it didn't come across in this interview.
I think it's a really good talk.
I thought this was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's super. It sounds really comfortable, dude. It sounds like going off track to me.
Yeah, Tim ripped us with some great stories.
Let's listen to it.
It's going off track!
I walk into this place. It's beautiful. I got some acreage, but I have like, I don't know, I didn't count, but like 30, 40 like mature trees on the property. And like the municipal stick and log pickup was like a week after I moved in. Where like, so I walk into this place, I take a look around, I learn what I have to do. I'm like, holy shit, I got to do a lot in like the next week or else it's just going to sit here all winter. So in like a week, I bought a chainsaw, extra large pruners. I've gotten poison ivy a couple times.
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm in it, man.
So how many acres do y'all have?
Two.
That's totally manageable.
Yeah.
What kind of trees are on it?
A bunch of pines, different kinds of pines, fully grown. We have some maple. Definitely a couple sycamore.
And oh, I love sycamores.
Everything else I'd be pretending to know. I have a lot to learn, Tim.
Sycamores are my favorite. You know, so we all knew this was gonna happen, that let's just use New York City as an example.
Yeah.
When COVID hit and it hit hard, you know, we all knew that people were gonna flee tightly packed urban areas to find solace somewhere else because it's terrifying, right? And I didn't really think that many people would move to Richmond, but it's just moving from one urban environment to another. But so our fantastic neighbors up the street, Greg and Sherry, who've lived in the neighborhood for like nearly 30 years, bought 10 acres out in Verina County here, you know, as their like retirement. We're done with the city living. The people who bought the house were Brooklynites.
Really?
Who work from home. And the very first thing that I noticed was they had no idea how to manage their lawn and the gardens and all that stuff. So what you're talking about is really funny. And they're great people. It's just really funny, like, watching the grass get higher and higher and, like, on the property. And it's really small. I mean, it's just a city lot, but, like, on the property, there's, like, a fig tree that no one was harvesting and all the flowers. It was just hilarious.
Yeah, they're out of sorts, man.
Yeah, and it's understandable.
So what do you do for us? Like, so as neighbors, are people just going to watch me, like, fumble around for a few years and fuck up a bunch of times till I figure it out? Or are people going to come, like, school me?
I don't know. I don't know. I think you'd be offended if I walked up and was like, Benjamin, you're doing that all wrong.
Yeah.
The blower.
That's true.
The blower goes on your back, not on the front. And
I would automatically dismiss you for being a cock.
Totally.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would just sit. I'd sit in the rocking chair and drink beer and laugh.
That sounds about right. I saw a guy the other day. I mean, he kind of looks like Portlandia a little, but he was really sweet. And I saw him outside of his house taking care of some very large logs and stumps and stuff, making firewood. Oh, that's another thing. I need firewood now.
Oh,
and I've already messed up. Like, I already started burning something I clearly shouldn't be burning.
Pine.
Please
tell me you didn't put pine in there.
I didn't yet, but I would have if you didn't say that.
Okay.
So I saw this guy and I'm like, you know what? This is where I'll use like my punk rock communal skills in this environment. I see he's got a lot of work to do. I need firewood and also don't know what I'm doing. So I'm going to go up to homie and just be like, yo, like, you got a laborer. Like, let's work. Like, let's bust this out. I just want a little bit of wood and the knowledge, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go into it like that. I'm pretty happy about it, though. It's just like a new... I don't think it's something like I can't do. You know, I'll figure it out.
No.
I just hope... I was telling Brad in the last episode, I just hope that my learning curve isn't like a rogue chainsaw to the thigh. And my learning curve is like putting the leaves in the wrong place.
Oh, man. Don't talk like that. You'll be fine.
And you've used all these things?
No. You know, I am not good with a chainsaw.
Okay.
But listen, you just... You just learn your instrument.
That's true.
Don't try to take down a 90-foot loblolly pine on your property.
Right.
Cut the limbs first. Get used to that. And then, you know, cutting wood with, you know, like for firewood, if it's the right kind of wood, there's this crazy thing that they came out with about 15 years ago. It's called YouTube. And, you can learn a lot if you look on that. But seriously, like, once you learn how to chop wood, you're fine. Just like fishing. I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't know this shit. I live in a city.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I've been to some of your places. I don't think you had a lot of lawn work to do.
No.
We barely had a house.
Not a riding mower. And right. And now I live in a house that's under 900 square feet. With like a back deck and sort of patio and then a little front yard. I wish I had more leaves and stuff to use for compost. I don't know.
So are you still in like downtown Richmond?
I'm in downtown Richmond, right across the river in Southside in this little teeny neighborhood. That's really super interesting to live in. And it's the first place I've ever owned. It's the first thing I've ever owned. Like, you know, I'm the guy who, like many of us, the person, like many of us who never had a vehicle with under 185,000 miles on it when they bought it. So this is like a big step. And the girls and I have been living in here for about 2 years and we love it. You can see the river. I'm looking at the river right now. Out the window. So it's real nice. We live right at one of the park entrances and the neighbors are absolutely fantastic. So we couldn't be happier.
You'd be a great neighbor. I'd love to have you as a neighbor.
I have great neighbors.
Alec, so Richmond, I have a very, from what I hear about from you and the townspeople that I know, Richmond is a very different place than it once was, and especially back in like the 80s and 90s. Like, what, where were you at during that time when you were coming up? Were you in downtown Richmond? Were you in the outskirts? Like, where did you actually grow up?
I grew up north of Richmond in what I refer to as North Virginia, and have lived in Richmond in the city since, I believe, August of 1990.
Okay.
It sounds about right. Let's just use that date. Like in the city. So that's 30 years of urban living. And yes, it's, I mean, Richmond's very different. Things change, you know, in the same way that every urban area is completely different now.
Totally.
And that started, I think the urban renewal really started maybe 15 years ago, and in mid-sized cities really didn't start expediting its maturity until, what do you think, 7 or 8 years ago is when Richmond just absolutely exploded. So look, the little neighborhood I live in right now, I think I'm accurate in saying that there's 1,300 apartment there's many apartment buildings going up surrounding our tiny little neighborhood, and I think it's 1,300 new people are going to be moving into this 1 mile radius, less than one mile radius. So, yeah, it's moving quick. So Richmond's very different, but everywhere is.
Is there any kind of like local backlash to that stuff, to the development, or is everybody just kind of acquiescing at this point?
I think people just mumble about the fact that the architecture looks nothing like what they appreciate in this city. It's too specific for me to have people understand. I'm trying to think of comparisons, but if you imagine like brick homes that were built in the 1850s,
right,
surrounded by sort of that German pod, mid-rise. I call them adult dorms. Like, so you live in suburbia, and this is not offensive. It's like not intended to offend nobody, but like, so you live in suburbia, then you go to Virginia Commonwealth University,
right?
And you move into the dorms, you got your meal plan, you get all that.
That's it.
And then you graduate and you get a job at like McDonald's, and then you move into the adult dorm that has the pool in the middle and the exercise room attached to it.
Parking deck.
And then you struggle to pay that $2,200 a month
right,
as you're trying to pay off your $50,000 student loan for the whatever it is. So I don't know. And it's, again, not intended to be offensive. Everybody takes their own route. But then eventually you got to learn how to mow your lawn.
Exactly. See, it's funny you say that. The exact same thing is happening. You know, I was just in Jersey City for like, you know, 13 years. And these same exact places you're talking about, these towers where, you know, where we are, it's towers because, you know, they don't have the restrictions of how high they can build things. And, you know, same thing as you, like people graduate college. I say it's like the post-college, pre your kids going to school towers, you know what I mean? So it's this like 7 or 8 years where you can manage to live around the city. You know, you appreciate the things it gives to you. But like you said, in these buildings with a gym, with parking deck, a pool, resource rooms, you know, basically like you said, little built in almost like a man caves and spa areas and all these places. And you actually never have to go into the community, really. You know, you can move to this place without ever really moving to this place. It's like being on tour. Like, you don't have to meet people who already live there. You don't have to get into it. You don't have to learn the history. You don't have to adapt your behavior, which around me seemed to be the biggest thing, because it's like, I don't know. I never want to be the person who says, like, this is the same reason people think, you know, skinheads and hardcore was okay. Was like, oh, we got to get the bad people out. You know, I don't want to play it like that. But there was a limit to these people's behavior when there still was some danger involved. where like you couldn't just go down the street and this roving mob of like 8 to 10 early 20s rich white people dressed to the nines being loud and imagining, like you said, this is your post-dorm environment. And, you know, maybe 10 years ago, they still couldn't have gotten away with it. And now they could.
Yeah. I've always thought that I don't want to be, as you're saying, like that person who's like, get off my lawn.
Yeah, exactly.
But really, so this is what I love about my neighborhood is it's like there's people who are anchored here. And then people mm-hmm. who are what I refer to as transient. And I think mm-hmm. the people that you're talking about are transient. They're not invested in any way in the block. They don't right. go by the rules that are sort of like established. And you know what? Like, I like that. Fuck the rules. Mm-hmm. Everything is so, I mean, it should be mixed up. The only time I'm going to be offended in any way is if you act violently towards anyone with no rational reason.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, I don't know what to say. Like, I'm trying so hard to not just be a grumpy middle-aged white dude who yeah. wishes things that were the way they were before.
Yeah.
Because that's so damn boring, man. Like, listen, things weren't better before. No, things were no. just different. And things aren't going to be better in the future. They're just going to be different. So appreciate it. Try to find value in it. So what I try to say is like people want this idea of a very Richmond experience. So they look into local musicians and artists when they move into the city. And do I benefit from that? Yes, I do.
Sure. Yeah.
And so does Ed Trask, the artist. And so does many other people that I know. And so that's like me trying to be positive and not get off my fucking lawn, but please stay out of the fucking train yard. I got to say when COVID hit and everyone decided that they were outdoor enthusiasts, as if Instagram didn't ruin all our secret spots to begin with. I have never seen anything like what happened in our little neighborhood.
Really?
I could not believe it. So the James River Park system, I'll just provide some reality to this.
Yeah.
I kept saying to my sister who lives at one entrance and I live at another entrance of the James River Park system, I'm like, it's out of friggin' control. And she's like, it's out of control here too. And everybody's sort of saying the same thing. Because of course you can't gather inside and it's beautiful out, spring, everybody wants to be outside. The James River Park system had never seen 1 million visitors in a year.
Okay.
And the James River Park system saw 1 million visitors on July 1st.
No.
Out of control. So those are the little things in the city where I'm like, man.
Yeah.
Y'all are in my fishing spot.
Yeah, there's no more secret spots.
There's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Although my daughter and I did spend all afternoon at one of our secret spots yesterday. And she just turned 8. She got a slingshot with a $15 gift certificate at Bass Pro Shop. And I told the guy who gave her the gift certificate that he's going to be replacing some windows at the house sometime in the near future. But we sat down there and she was catching catfish and shooting her BB gun and doing her thing and shooting her thing. So, yeah, there is still places to achieve solitude here.
That's good. There's still pockets. Now, like, so Richmond in 1990, what first brought you down that way? Was it music? Was it school? Was it
I can't remember it at all. It was something about, it was a veil. I mean, a veil was already together. And
so a veil was already going on by the time.
Yeah. But when we all moved in together,
mm-hmm.
I was the drummer.
Okay, so is that early?
So it's this long ago, right? Yeah. I had hair down to my ass, and I was the drummer, and the singer quit because we were smoking cigarettes in the house 3 months before he moved down or something like that.
Okay.
It's sort of like all kind of irrelevant. No, I didn't come down to go to school. we all came down. Bo was in the Navy at the time. All of us pretty much worked. Eric, who became the drummer, was like one of the only of the posse that didn't move in the original wave. Bo ended up deserting the Navy, and then I don't know. It was just different. We sort of just kind of just took over this house and started running around like crazy people. And some of us had spent lots of time down here going to shows anyway. So we knew plenty of people and jumped right into the punk and hardcore scene. And everybody kind of found their own niches. I kind of fell more into like the activist sort of thing and like graffiti and trains and whatnot. Right. And, we just kind of did our thing and then ended up putting out a record. And I started setting up tours real early, early on. I think the first time we crossed the country might've been 92 or 93. And I did that with phone numbers from the band Born Against.
Oh, all right.
So there you go. Here's some New Jersey connection.
How'd you know those guys by then?
So I was setting up shows about right when I moved down here. And then I don't remember what year it was that Rorschach and Born Against did an 11-week tour. But right. I was one of many people to set up shows for them like normal at that time.
And what venue in Richmond was that show at?
I can't remember. It was probably Twisters. Okay. Which later became Nancy Reagan and then whatever it ended up being before it shut down.
Gotcha.
But I would set up shows like at a warehouse, at Twisters, at the Metro, and a couple other places. And so they came down and like a lot of the tours back then, they ended up having 5 days off or whatever. And we all became really close. And when the tour finished, Adam Nathanson from Born Against sent me a Xeroxed list of phone numbers with sort of like a chart on it that would say like Benny in New Jersey did our show, like Benny in New Jersey phone number, and then sort of like a check mark that would mean Benny did a pretty good job.
Like good enough to call again.
Yeah. And then like Brad in New York City, X, hell no, bad job. And anyway, so I was given this ability to.
That's like a Bible. That's a huge thing to get. That's
awesome. And it was crazy because it's just one Xerox piece of paper. But that fucking thing took us across the country.
Yeah.
So we had this Ford Econo line that we called Jenny, and we had made our first record called Satiate, which is fucking awful. But
not true.
Well, not true. That's interesting that you think it's not true because we're talking about repressing it because it's not been repressed.
Yeah, it is not bad. I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah, times go on. But so we have this record that we've put out essentially ourselves. Adam Thompson put it out on Catheter Records, which was our little record label that we ran out of the house. And it was funded by Charles Maggio from Burn Blanstein and Old Glory Records up in Vermont, each gave us $500 so that we could press the first version of it. So we did that. And I set up a tour using these phone numbers that Adam Nathanson and Born Against had given us. And somehow we made it all the way across the country. And Adam Thompson, who helped put out that first record, sent it to Larry Livermore from Lookout Records while we were in transit. And Larry came out to an Avail show on the West Coast. I believe it was our first time there. I hope
so. He got it sent to him while you guys were on your way out there.
Yeah. And Adam Thompson was just being kind and maybe trying to get himself off the hook of running a fucking record label. If I remember correctly, Larry Livermore came to the Avail Rancid show, which had about 80 people at it. if that gives you a time period.
Yeah, sure.
I think they had just had a 7-inch out or had it coming out. Anyway, he put out that record and then Avail moved to Lookout and then we just kept on trucking and setting up tours using payphones and fax machines and whatnot until Margie Albin started setting up our tours, and she still books me to this day.
Yeah, yeah. You are a loyalist, my friend.
I am.
Now, even before that, like, backtrack. Like, I know you have, like, a crazy history. I know you love metal, and you have a history with metal. So what was your actual, like, entry into, like, heavy music? Like, do you remember a time when you first heard something heavy and fast and kind of just like what drew you to it at the time?
Yeah, that's so, thank you for asking good questions. So I haven't thought about this in a long time, but so I have two young daughters and they're becoming really interested in different kinds of music, and they're pretty diverse. And that's helped me reflect on like, how the fuck did I end up being like a bad folk rock singer? Like, how did this? And so if people ask, like, how did you end up being a mediocre folk rock singer? And I always give the same sort of answer, which is that's the music that my parents listened to, and it deeply influenced me, and I really like it. Okay. And I've always played punk music, and the last thing I want to listen to when I'm off a tour or not on stage is loud, fast music. But and everyone else says they got into it through skating, but I did not skate. Okay. If I get a skateboard, it just shoots out from underneath me and I break my wrist. Yeah, so
pretty close to the same. Yeah.
So I was the guy around the neighborhood on the BMX bike with the jean jacket and the long hair with the hat pulled backwards that said, "Look at me, instant asshole." Asshole, just add alcohol. That's what my fucking hat said. And with the Marlboro Reds in my pocket. But how did I get there?
Yeah.
I have to go back to my dad worked. Let's just say at one point we ended up living in London, England when he was doing some training. Oh, wow. I still to this day can't believe the autonomy that my parents gave my brother and I when we were there. I have a brother who's 2 years older than me.
Okay.
And basically they, for the year that we lived there, and I was a preteen, like 13, they gave us a tube card, like a metro card, a subway card, so that we could just go anywhere.
Cool.
And my brother had just gotten really into metal. And of course, I followed suit. So the real shit is that I still look up to my brother, and he just started taking me to fucking crazy shows. So I saw Iron Maiden on Power Slave. I saw Motley Crue on Shout at the Devil. I saw, this is all in England. Monsters of Rock out in Castle Donington. I went to my first punk show at the Marquee in London. This is in the 80s. I saw Metallica on Kill 'Em All in like a 800 cap club.
Holy shit. Nice.
My brother went to see The Clash at Brixton Academy. I didn't make it to that. My brother saw Venom at Hammersmith, the one that was filmed for live at Hammersmith Odeon.
Right.
So I got all into it just from that. And really, like, so when I was younger than that, I would listen to the Go-Go's and whatnot. But I really remember for whatever reason, maybe it was because I was, I'm from Irish descent and raised in a Catholic church. When I heard Venom at War with Satan, nothing spoke to me more. And it was kind of unbelievable. And then
needed, like, the Catholic ideology over time.
Oh, it just
would make sense.
I would go to church wearing my Venom shirt that said, "Look at me, Satan's child, born of evil, thus defiled." And how the hell that they let me in there. But and then later, you know, back in the States in Virginia, everybody was listening to classic rock and like Southern rock. Right. And then the punks, like the skaters, were listening to Black Flag and Suicidal Tendencies. And when the crossover happened, those folks were coming at me and I'm like, listen to Rain and Blood by Slayer. And we all went to go see Slayer in Washington, D.C. on the Rain and Blood tour. That was my first stage dive during chemical warfare.
Nice.
I call it a head walk, but
more of a head walk. Yeah.
My last stage dive was a stage flop, but
everyone's got their pathetic last one. I'm right there with you.
But so, yeah, that's my long-winded answer. But when the crossover happened, they were asking me about our music. I was asking them about theirs. And then then I ended up in punk bands, like as a drummer, because I was a thrash drummer. And so when you can play like Slayer style thrash, when someone lets you listen to Group Sex by Circle Jerks, man, it's so fun to play that style with the four fours and then kicking into the cut time and then a breakdown and the song's over.
Oh, that's so awesome. So that's where you fell in love.
That's where I turned into a punk rocker.
I love it, man. And did how much younger is Caitlin than you? Were you guys playing, you know, you play music together as adults. Was there any mutual music as kids, or did that come later in life?
No, Caitlin's my sister who plays violin. Caitlin is 12 years younger than me. Played guitar, I played drums. We had metal bands when we were kids. It was just basically him and I.
You remember any names of those bands? Like,
well, our main band was called Militia.
What was it?
Militia.
Oh, that's good.
It was great. And the T was an upside down cross.
Of course.
And with all kinds of emblems hanging from it that I shouldn't mention because things were just fucking way different back then. But
different time.
Militia. Let me think. I can give you some lyrics. I was a singing drummer, by the way.
Ooh, even better.
Let's see. Born on earth with hell on our minds, decreed to change God's holy shrine. With Hades the masters, the priest must die.
Holy shit.
And that's cut time. I mean, that's hellfire. Death leads in that hole. Hellfire. Through blood and hell, the battle's fought. Lord Satan's teachings must be taught. God's cremation is our only goal. New Testament, Lord Satan's scroll. Wow. God damn, I still remember that shit. I got it. I'm bringing it back.
as a Jew, my theory always holds up, which is ex-Catholics make the best metal people. Because you got to know the info. You got to know the stuff, you know, to either be able to, like, speak about it or even reject it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Maybe you can help me with this, because my son has taken a real liking to Iron Maiden.
Ooh.
I got a lot of vinyl around the house, so it has the, you know, the big images of Eddie and stuff. I told him Eddie's a superhero who fights the devil. So I'm kind of teaching, you know, some sort of religious, you know, background here via Iron Maiden. So I kind of reconciled it. Like, that's fine. He can see this imagery as long as he's using it for good. But then the other morning I come down and kind of catch him murmuring, 666, the number of the beast. And I'm like,
oh my God, I love it.
Like, is this okay?
Oh my
is that okay?
God. I don't know. I used to carve the deepest upside down crosses in my arms. If I got tattoos back then, I'd have like pentagrams on my fucking face, like everywhere. You know, like, I don't know. Take it away from him right now.
he's got a 666.
So my mom says about Catholicism now, she looks back on it. She goes, it's just a bunch of weird men with dresses and in those French things on their heads. And my dad doesn't buy any of it. Why did y'all put us through this? And now you, Benny, you're making Satanists out of your children. You need to practice the parental advisory.
No, listen, Tim, this is part of my master plan. You know, a lot of Jews, they'd be mad at me for breaking a Jewish bloodline. The way I see it is I fucked up a white one. You know what I mean? And now I'm really fucking it up.
I love it.
You know what I'm saying? I love it.
Someone has got to do it. Fuck up that white bloodline. Just destroy it. Fuck it.
The Lord's work. It's like you said, you know, you don't get anywhere just accepting the past as is, right? We're progressive
That's right.
people,
That's
are we
right.
not?
We're progressive people in a progressive time. Probably the most progressive time in the history of our times.
I mean, it might be, you know, like, you know, when this is all over, like, who the fuck knows, right? But, I mean, you are seeing, you know, so much of what's happening is backlash. You know, the way, like, human beings act. And this isn't, like, coming out of nowhere. This is people going crazy for the fact that they had to have, like, a black president named Hussein for 8 years. And they just can't handle it. So it's, to me, it's like the thing has made a jump. And this is just a death rattle of a very powerful old minority. We don't have to get into that, though, because that's no, but no
let's just say that when power is challenged, those in power act in some of the strangest ways.
Sure do. Desperate motherfuckers.
That's right.
But listen, this is where we switch to something fun.
Yeah.
Which is the mystery friend. Okay.
Yeah.
There's going to be music playing right now.
Oh, God.
Brad, you're playing it?
I'm queuing it right now.
Queuing it. Okay. But listen, the point of this game, Tim, is I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story that I know that happened to you. I'd like you to tell me about the story. Tell me what happened, how it happened, anything fun. And then you have to guess which mystery friend told me. You up for it?
Jesus. Yeah.
It's not bad. I already ran into a problem with the Brian Keeneland episode of getting too incriminating of a story that it ruined my segment.
All right. So, you don't want to hear about my acid trip the other week?
I would like to hear about
that. Cool. I did trip acid.
Oh, all right. We'll do that right after this.
I'm not sure I need to tell anybody that one.
All right. We'll loop you up here. So apparently on one of your tours, you took a detour to go to the Black Butte Center for Railroad Culture in Oregon. Slept in an old train car and then played a show in the train car next to it. That's all I know about the story.
Yes.
Can you tell me what happened and how it was?
It's not that crazy. The Black
Butte. Learning my life. Now this is not incriminating enough.
No, there's nothing incriminating about this. The Black Butte Center for Railroad Culture, which is not in Oregon, which is in Northern California, in Black Butte, Weed, California, essentially that exit, is on the UP main line. And it's a functioning like museum at this point. And it's a place where a certain variety of train nerd like myself sort of has a safe haven. And it's actually one of the my favorite places in the entire world. And the trains come by, all of my train people are there, and they have multiple restored railroad cars. They have outdoor kitchen. They have an outdoor pizza oven. And what Corey Brandon or Jenny Owen Youngs, who's the mystery friend, is referring to is or Julie Carr or those are the three.
Still wrong.
Hold on.
My mystery friend is good.
I'm getting there. This is very good. You're getting me really good because I had those as the green lights. But so there are two antique wooden boxcars coupled together on the property at the Black Butte Center for Railroad Culture. And one of those is an art gallery, which is amazing. And they rotate art exhibits. And the other one is the show space, which just has like a ankle high stage, Christmas lights, a little PA and a deck. So people can stay on the deck and play in the car. And I've played there twice at least. And it's my favorite place in the world. So
that's awesome. And you sleep and you're allowed to sleep in the train cars while you're there.
That stuff I don't want to get too into where people sleep and that people sleep there if they do. But there are for the people who who curate the area, there are a couple cabooses that are converted. Well, not converted, because cabooses usually have bunks and wood stoves in them to begin with, but have been refurbished for sleeping if necessary.
That's awesome. So no stab at the mystery friend. You gave me a few. I love how confidently you put that in.
Well, you see, I put Corey and Jenny first. Julie Carr. I give up.
Your silent weapon, Maddie Scarrow.
Oh, that mother. Yeah, dang.
He got you. He got
you. Matt Gear. Yes, of course, Matt Gear. Oh, I blew it.
He was good. I caught him on a dog walk this morning.
That was a good one.
So since that was not incriminating at all, now you have to tell me a little bit about the acid thing. And I don't ask this to be like, yo, man, what was it? Like, I've always been afraid of psychedelics for a number of reasons. There's like an actual reason that I'm scared of them. And as I get older and I get a little more comfortable with the space in my mind, I get a little comfortable with the gray areas. I'm not as fearful of death and things like that as I used to be. I've been considering it more and more, like maybe microdosing or trying something like that. So what was your experience like?
Microdosing. Do that. So I don't do psychedelic drugs. I'll say this.
Right.
I'll say this. I was down at one of my train spots recently, and let's just say I was fishing, and there was another person at that train spot who was fishing as well. And I didn't know him, and we were talking, and he was real nice. And he was saying that he just mainly smokes weed and does psychedelics. Okay. And then I explained to him what happened to me in August, and he just said, he kind of just was like, takes a lot of power to get through that. And that made me really feel like he was like emotional strength. And I was like, that really made me feel like I did accomplish something.
Wow. Okay.
So, when I was young, I did psychedelics, right? And I don't do any drugs now at all. Yeah, yeah. I'm not straight edge, like True Tell Beach Week or something.
But pretty clean living. Yeah.
No, I mean, I drink beers, but not to excess unless maybe once or twice a year, especially when Roger Harvey was still drinking. Him and I would notoriously get drunk, but, and I'll take a hit of weed and watch the Donald Trump, town hall just for the bizarreness of it or something, you know, but like, I just don't do that. So, but I do occasionally smoke weed. And what I really like is edibles, like a really low dose edible, because I feel like, you know, if it, I don't get them very often. And so, listen, I'm going to try to be as brief as possible, but motherfucker, I have not been around anyone but my children and a couple of my neighbors for like 6 fucking months, right? I haven't played any music. I'm not grieving. I'm fine. I'm really enjoying being home. And my kids are at their mom's house for the night. And I'm like doing some carpentry project out back, right? I'm cutting wood in my awesome neighbors, who have like a double empty lot in between their houses, have like a tent set up. And there's like 15 people like in their 50s to early 60s. And they're like, playing like country folk, dead influenced, you know what I'm saying? Like the good Grateful Dead influenced kind of music. And they start playing this song that I really love, this classic rock song called Sweet Melissa. So I'm out there listening to them while I'm doing the carpentry project. I'm like, this is foolish. Get a beer and go sit out there and watch them. You haven't watched music. You haven't listened to music in so long. So I go out there and my hearing is fucked up and I haven't been around people in a long time. And no one, everybody is doing the social distance thing. And like, everybody's really just handling it. There's like 3 people who are like my friend Gwamper who are just like raging. And this is like 6:30 in the afternoon. And I like, am sitting there trying to acclimate. So I'm trying to sit Indian or crisscross applesauce and like trying to do my thing. And this dude in his like, you know, like 60-year-old man.
Yeah.
Big clean cut as fuck looking comes over and he's got a bag of, you know, commercial edible weed gummies.
Okay.
And he goes, and the band's playing, and he goes, do you want a THC gummy? And I go, I would love one. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah.
And I, because I'm fucking a dumpster diver. I was like, I'm going to save this fucking thing for like the perfect time. You know what I'm saying? Like
for the perfect time. Yeah.
And he goes, he's like, I look up at him and I go, he'd introduced himself. By the way, I should go back just a second. He walked up and he's like, hey, I'm Sam. And I was like, hey, I'm Tim. And because I'm not real close with these neighbors, I needed to reassure Sam that I am a neighbor, not just an intruder. Oh, like,
yeah, not a crasher.
So I'm like, oh, I know. And I mentioned the neighbors. And I'm like, I live right on the corner, two houses away. And he's like, awesome. And he's like, you want a THC gummy? And I was like, yeah, word. And so, and I grab it. And then I go, how many milligrams is this? And he goes, you'll thank me later. And just walked away.
Sam.
Fucking Sam. So I'm like, I put it in my chewing tobacco pouch. And then I'm listening to the music. I'm like, I'm just going to take a nibble because I'm just going to take a little nibble and then go back to the house, have another beer, cook supper, and go to sleep. Yeah, so I fucking take setup. Perfect setup. So I take a nibble. It's like 7 o'clock. I'm going to just leave everything else. I'm going to fast forward to 10:30 PM. Motherfucker. I go to sleep at like 9:30 usually.
Okay. Yeah.
10:30. I'm laying there. Also, my house is so small. I don't have a room. I sleep on the couch.
Okay.
Both of my kids have a room. Like they each have a room. And then I sleep in the middle of the room on the couch. And that will assure that when they're preteens and teenagers, that they can't get out of the fucking house.
Oh, it's genius. Security. Oh, who needs Brinks?
Yeah. That's fuck right. This. But so I'm laying there on the couch. And I cannot fucking sleep, dude. Okay. I'm like losing my fucking mind. I'm like, what is going on? And I was like, I didn't think about the THC gummy at all.
Right.
It didn't even cross my fucking mind.
Okay.
And then I get up to pee and I'm just staring at the toilet.
Okay.
And then I look in the mirror and I go, holy fuck, you're tripping on fucking acid.
No.
Sam!
Because I'd done acid so many times when I was a kid,
yeah.
Everything started lining up.
Right.
And I was like I'm motherfucker, THC, motherfucking gummy my ass. I'm going to go fucking kick your fucking head in, motherfucker. Like all this shit. And like, so then I'm starting to get irrational. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. And then I'm like, this is a bad trip. This is a bad fucking trip. This is a bad fucking trip. And I can't get out of it. And I'm like counting on my fingers. Oh, shit. You haven't even peaked yet. Yeah. Oh, fuck. It's coming.
Right.
Oh,
shit. Hours, yes.
Fuck. Oh, man. Fuck. How is this hitting me so hard? This is liquid LSD injected into fucking gummies. Like, what the fuck? Like, now I'm out of my mind. I'm like, how the fuck are you going to have a heart attack? Heart just going. Like, okay, calm down. Breathe. And I'm fucking pacing my little teeny house in circles, right? Out of my fucking mind. I try to turn on music. I try everything out of my fucking mind. Worst trip. Don't look in the mirror. Don't, you know, like,
all this fucking trip. Don't open that door. No.
Don't fucking. No. And then so like, so what does a man do at midnight when he's about to start fucking peeking? Like when he is peeking, I call my neighbor, my other neighbor, my fucking solid, got me, homie, fucking vegan, straight edge, fucking awesome, gangster neighbors.
Got me. Yeah.
They're sleeping like motherfuckers. And I ain't waking them up. And I'm not going outside my house. So what does a man do? Calls his publicist. So she answers the phone and just starts laughing her ass off.
I can imagine dying.
And I'm like, this is not funny. This isn't funny. I'm fucking tripping my fucking head off. I can't fucking, my dick is the size of a fucking mushroom. Like a fucking, I can't fucking, She's like, drink some water. I'm like, I've drank like 500 fucking gallons of water. Fuck, God. Fucking tripping my ass off. I'm like hallucinating. Oh, I'm fucking like, seeing trails. I was like, this sucks. And she's just fucking holds it down. And she just goes, like, stops laughing. And she goes, you've done acid plenty of times.
Right.
You know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Just give it time. Gave you know, like, she's control. Like doing that. I'm like, okay, got it, got it.
Get off, keep going, keep
get off, get off the phone with her. And then I'm pacing again, fucking pacing. Someone's getting fucking killed in the alley. I run out there. I got fucking nothing but running shorts on, like running in the fucking alley. There's no one getting killed in the fucking alley.
Oh, no.
I'm like fucking tripping so hard. What? So what does a man do? Calls his accountant at fucking 1 a.m.
Oh my God.
My accountant's just like, what the fuck? He answers the phone and he's like, you're just really high. And I was like, no, I'm not. And he goes, close your eyes. And I was like, okay. And he's like, do you see Grateful Dead patterns? And I go, yes. And he goes, fuck. And then he's like, stay in the house. Put your clothes back on.
Yeah.
Fucking do not leave the fucking house. Dude.
Yeah, don't run out naked.
Fucking leave the house. And he's like, you got beer? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, drink it. I was like, fuck yeah, that. And then he's like, you got weed? Smoke that. I was like, no. And then he's like, you got cigarettes? Smoke those. I was like, no. Like, just like fucking barking at him. They're just like, oh, it was awful. And then he's like, watch a movie or something. And the thing is, it's like, I don't ever watch TV or movies.
Right.
So I'm that motherfucker who's like so sensitive, I like cry during a commercial.
Yeah,
so I'm like, I am not turning on motherfucking ET while I'm having a bad fucking trip.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Then you'll be walking through the white plastic tunnel before you know it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was awesome. So, I didn't sleep at all. But what I did was turn on jazz music.
Okay.
And that kind of made, I was having like, sound hallucinations from that stuff too, like running outside again. But really, like, I've always heard music in colors. And so I was, I had like the afterglow and I was able to like play with the colors. But in the morning, I started walking and, I'd also texted Roger Harvey at some point in too. And so we talked on the phone for like an hour and a half. And at the end, he was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And I go, I'm tripping. So I tripped for like 17 fucking hours
and
it didn't leave my body for like 3 days. And so I, of course, like any person who's tripping and like the afterglow middle-aged white dude is clearly going to go to fucking Target. So I go to Target.
I need those lights.
So it's like, this is going to be great. And so I'm like talking to Kate Hiltz of the Tasty fame and Chunksaw Records fame on the phone. And we're talking business. And then I explained to her that I'm actually still tripping on acid. And we were working on this, this release that I have coming out on the 13th of November, which is like a 2-show live thing that I said, you know, to put it out on vinyl is like making it a fucking box set. And that's ridiculous and a waste. So let's just do it on digital and streaming. And she was like, fuck that Grateful Dead tripping dude. We're putting it out on double cassette tape too, so people can make mixtapes. And I was like, that's awesome. Still tripping. So I got this fucking double cassette tape coming out that I consented to.
You consented?
Of course.
I was tripping. A box set, Kate Hiltz talked you into a double cassette while you were coming down on acid. this is accurate.
Yeah? Someone has got to do it, and she did it.
Oh, God bless Kate Hiltz. Well, since we got there, we're at this record. I wanted to talk to you about it anyway. Now, the thing, I know you've been talking about it a bit, but I wanted to ask, I know
you always like throw demos out and old recordings and stuff when you're done with albums. So was it hard for you after getting like a live recording that you didn't even know someone recorded? Like, was that difficult for you to reconcile with like how it sounded and what it was and actually like putting it out?
Yeah, it's torture. I gotta say that recently I've been listening to a lot of the Going Off Track podcasts, and I'm gonna go off track for just a second. Mm-hmm. And I turned on my own. I'm the person who can't listen to my own records. I can't see videos of myself. I just don't like it. It makes me very uncomfortable. Yeah, and I turned on the Going Off Track thing just because somebody had noted to me recently that it was one of their favorite interviews that I had participated in. And I just couldn't stand it. like hearing myself, the content was great, but I just don't like hearing myself. But, and that's just a little, that was years ago. I don't remember what year it was, but
6 years ago.
6 years ago. Yeah. But with that said, that's a little background on like how I feel about hearing myself. Mm-hmm. So during the lockdowns, in an attempt to like keep myself busy and keep Lance Kohler, who has always helped me with recordings, busy because he lost all of his business and wasn't playing any shows. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to go through some of like his archives and find some stuff that he could work on and I could work on. And he had these two shows. It's like 33 fucking tracks recorded from a 2018 weekend run that we did.
Oh, so Lance had them.
Lance had them. And he had recorded them on his own.
Okay.
You know, so they're like properly recorded. Right. And so he just started giving me rough mixes, but listening to myself for 2 hours is torture, because I really did have to like, you know, make mix notes and stuff like that. But what's really great about it and what kept my interest is that my sister's playing violin throughout the entire thing. Andrew Ali is playing harmonica. Julie Carr is doing vocals. Lance Kohler is doing percussion. Josh Small is playing resonator guitar and doing vocals. So it's like a whole big thing. And really, like, what I'm doing is putting this out there with that Grateful Dead aspect to it, where it's like everybody used to make board tapes or like recordings and just put them out. And it 33 tracks is going to be the same price as like just a normal record. And
which
just
was super punk rock, right? The Grateful Dead thing?
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And then that gives me like, you know, I'm done with a new record. Like, I'm not done recording it, but I'm done demoing it and really excited to get in the studio. But it's just get something out there. We're all in this weird spot. And then, so like, then the conflict is like, November 3rd is election day. And then the thing comes out on November 13th. And like, you know, most of my close friends and who are, I appreciate their critiques are like, no, I think we're going to need something, you know, you know, cause it's I was afraid that the release will get lost in the chaos, but who cares? It's just music. I'd rather make sure that there's some stability than
keep adding some positivity into the ether. We need it. Yeah. We need it more than your silence. Fuck yeah. So what's your intention with the new stuff and the new record? You got like a timeline for that? Or
no, not at all. But I got to say that I'm enjoying the songs more than I ever have. When COVID kicked in, it did something to my writing process that's never happened. And I don't know how to explain this, and I'll try to be as brief as I can, is that like, in a lot of ways, I think that we write for the room that we're most comfortable in. And I've always written for a 250 capacity club with a shin high stage that sold out and everybody's screaming along.
Sure. Yeah.
But suddenly, with the idea that that might not be happening anytime soon, my writing approach turned into something totally different. It's a much quieter approach, is I guess my point. And I don't know why I'm more interested in it than I have been, but I cannot believe that I'm wasting everyone's time by releasing yet another fucking record because I just have so many out. But I really, really like these songs.
So it's almost like it's like the idea of not having to deliver it in that context that you think it like freed you up a little.
Yeah. I kind of don't know how to explain it. Yes. 100%. Talking Head singer. What's his name?
David Byrne.
David Burns. It was accidental. Like when COVID kicked in and I realized that I was writing a completely different style, which is really folky, like my mother's folk. But of course it's my lyrics, you know, which take it, it's fair, you know, obviously more contemporary. I stumbled upon David Burns talking on like one of those afternoon NPR shows on like a Sunday, talking about writing songs at the beginning of Talking Heads at CBGB's, how the songs that he wrote for CBGB's did not work in other places.
Right.
And it really resonated with me when I was listening how like, you know, like I can play this song in a 300 capacity club, but it doesn't work in a theater.
Right.
And then I started making the connection of like being freed of the idea of playing specific places and writing less for my anticipation of presenting them live and more for the need to get this out of my system in the way that it's coming. So it was like a clean slate.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, like writing for like nobody.
Well, I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? Because, I mean, bands get into those routines where, you know, you put out a record, you spend the next like 18 months, more or less, you know, traveling and touring on it. And then you get very little time basically home and you're either writing it on tour or coming home for a small chunk of time and writing it and then rinse, repeat. So it's like, you know, it's almost like your reality is dictating the context.
Yeah, and it's like, and it's the successes. Like, you know, the bands who tour on European festival circuits know that at the end, you start the song going, you just learn it. But like, at the same time, and this is not something that like a lot of writers, I think, do intentionally, but it's not unlike like your studies of social media. You post a picture on your Instagram. You have 1,000 followers and 900 of them like a picture. The next picture you post is going to more likely be with that sort of image. In songwriting is the same way, and that's why we watch so many people try to write the song that got them where they're at in, to an embarrassing level. But I think what we really also don't see is the fact that we're playing for the room. And and again, like this is not intentional in any way, the way that I just came with these songs. But it is really cleansing. And it could be the worst record in the world, but I will like it because I like it.
Good on you for like letting it flow like that. You know, I mean, I think, you know, maybe something I appreciate about you in general is that it's almost like if everything is going one way, it's your instinct to go the other way.
That's something I've taught my kids that from the day they were born, zig when they zag. And that's what I always say. I'm like, you see all those motherfuckers walking down the river that way? And they're like, yeah, let's go to the hole in the fence.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, go the opposite way.
I'm with that. Now, one story I had to get from you, because I'd never heard of it before, was let's stay on Jersey a little bit just for me. Our mutual friend, the Brian Fallon. Apparently, you guys were in the room together when you got a call about playing with the Richmond Symphony and your first reaction was like, nah, fuck that. And like Brian called you out a little.
He did.
Like, can you tell me that?
I can't totally remember it. I used to tell this on stage, but getting senile. So at Crossroads,
yeah,
with Andy Diamond and crew, and I assume this is one of the holiday shows with Brian, and yeah, my phone rings and I usually don't pick it up, but it's, I know the number. It's David Fisk, who's like the director of the Richmond Symphony. And he just says, like, he's English. So his accent, instantly, people with English accents are just so fucking smart that feel small, yeah, no matter what. So I answer the phone. Hello, governor. No, but he's like, it's David Fisk from Richmond Symphony. And it was weird that he was calling like after hours like that.
Right.
Because it was like almost showtime type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's clearing his desk off clearly. But he says, would you like to collaborate with the Richmond Symphony? And I kind of was like, what, you know, like, what you mean? And he's like, we play your songs.
Wow. Okay.
And at the theater that you use to unload trucks and build stages and hang lights, which is the Carpenter Theater, which is this beautiful theater. You know, the last show that I went to, like in the audience, was Willie Nelson, if that gives you an idea, or like the Richmond Ballet's Nutcracker or Swan Lake. Like those are the kind of events that I see. And I was just like, hell no. I ain't doing that. So, and then Brian was like, man, you go on stage and talk this shit, jibber jabbing about fucking challenging yourself and doing things different and fucking living this life. And you're saying no. And I was like, God damn it.
Fuck you, Brian.
Fuck you, Brian. But no, I called him back and I did it. And I tell you, I lost a lot of damn sleep.
Yeah.
And it, let me just really quickly explain like how this goes with a union symphony is so this great local composer named Trey Pollard wrote all of the music for the symphony, mainly on his own direction. Like we had a couple meetings, but he gave me samples of what it would sound like symphonic, like with like keys. So I got used to that. And then so day before is a dress rehearsal and I show up and I got like, I don't know, 15 minutes.
Okay.
To rehearse and like sound check with the whole symphony and the conductor, Josh Wynn. And then the next day I got like 15 minutes.
Oh my God.
Because they are geniuses. They're the
right, like
best.
That's all they need.
They are the Michael Jordans, you know, like, and so they can just read it. And so I get up there. I thought about what I wore for the first time. Like I wore a button up shirt. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what to do. Yeah. And, man, it just flowed. It was absolutely beautiful. There's songs. Like when I say that I hear colors, like there were songs that just, it was just the whole room was just colors and I couldn't see anybody because the front of house lights were blinding me. So that was great. So I just got to close my eyes and hear the colors and like, it was really, really magical. And once in a lifetime, you know, like, it was beautiful. And my kids were there and my parents came and it was great. And it was the first time my dad had ever seen me play.
I know you usually don't like think that way, but was this one of those unique times that you felt kind of like, I don't know, that sense of, I worked here. Like I used to just like, you know, work super long days and get paid whatever to work here. And now I'm like on the stage leading a show. Like, was that like lost on you in the moment or were you really like soaking that in?
No, I was more humbled by it. Like it was certainly not like a victory lap. It was more like a, like I walked on stage and was like, I used to work here.
Yeah.
Like straight up. Like that's what I told is like, and I want to thank local 87 IATSE union. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, give fist bumps to my homies. Like, it was like, that was the biggest accomplishment, but it, like, really it was just I had a thought and I just lost it. But you know,
too
it's just
acid, bro.
It's too much acid, but like, really it's just, it was, I'm such a private person. It was a very lonely event too. Like, because I like showed up, did my thing, sat in the dressing room, went up and played, and walked straight out the door and walked home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I had my phone off the whole time. And then I sat out back, had a beer, and went to sleep.
Yeah.
Like I didn't see anybody at all. So it's just, that shit's weird. But man, it was really, really neat. Really neat.
I'm with you, Tim. It's one of the reasons I love you is I'm the same type of person. It doesn't matter what kind of night it is, how glorious it is, what kind of achievement I had. I always seem to wind up alone somewhere quiet.
I like it.
You know, like, I don't know. Because some people make art for different reasons. All right. So we've had you for a long time. I'm so glad we finally got to do it after our first little snafu. But I have one final thing I need to know. I have three categories. I need your favorite songwriter from the punk genre, from the folk genre, and from the metal genre.
Fuck, I listen to so little music. I really only listen to classical music.
Composer? Should I add composer?
No, that's so fucking academic. No, I don't even know their names. Favorite songwriter, punk. It's obscure, and I don't mean to bring his name up again. I would say that Adam Nathanson from Born Against is my favorite songwriter, but it was his work in the band The Young Pioneers.
Yeah,
I find band. To be one of my greatest influences. And the other one for lyrics and music, who I think is just exceptional, is an utter piece of fucking shit. And so I'm going to leave him nameless.
Okay.
And that's what happens. That's what happens when you tour for many, 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 many motherfucking years and you only dislike a couple people. So his music has been lost in his bullshit.
I hate when that happens, but it does happen, doesn't it?
Folk is so difficult because it's folk and country music is pretty much all I listen to. Okay. My daughter's favorite is Sturgill Simpson.
Okay. Good new record.
I haven't listened to the new one, the bluegrass one yet, but my favorite contemporary other than Sturgill is Tyler Childers.
Okay.
And there's so many great ones, Prine, Nelson, you know, Prine, rest in peace. But I would say that my greatest influence as a kid and to this day, as tragic as he is a personality or was a personality, is Towns Van Zandt.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
Sure.
I know a lot of people who aren't familiar with the genre don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. And then metal? Yeah. Oh, man.
We're going back to Venom?
No, I mean, the biggest influence, I'm not going to say songwriting as much as I'm going to say the life-changing, life-altering record and band that created it, of course, is Rain and Blood by Slayer. I just don't know that anything can top what that did to me when I had a scheduled fist fight in high school, and how I could turn on Rain and Blood and just fucking get ready, and then turn on NWA and just be like, I got this fucking shit. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not sure that's a songwriter, but
I think so.
Yeah.
King Kong got nothing on me.
Tie awesome. My hair back in a ponytail.
I love it. You got it. You can't give him anything to grab, right?
Grab that shit.
That's it. I love whenever, you know, it's a first timer when they show up in a baggy hoodie or something, you know? Like, come on, son.
Or a backpack on.
Yeah, no good. Well, thanks, Tim. Thanks for taking all this time, man.
I'm glad this worked out. I appreciate it. Right back.
All right.
Man, Tim.
T- Tim.
You know what? Fuck Sam, huh? The guy at the party. You can't do that.
No.
That is not a good move.
Oh. That's a bad deal.
Because you're lucky you gave it to him who had like a background and kind of knew. You could have given someone a mental breakdown. Seriously.
That could be murder. That's what, have you ever thought about that?
It could definitely be murder. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. If in that moment when Tim was like in his running shorts, ran in and out into that alley and there was actually someone there.
Yeah.
That's one of those like true crime stories about some guy on bath salts or something.
There's nothing cool about giving somebody a drug that, especially something so potent. It's really uncool. It's the definition of uncool, I think.
So fuck Sam.
Yeah, fuck that
wherever
guy.
This guy
he
is.
He should have got his head fucking cracked for
fucking
that.
Fucking hipster, whatever he is. I love the people Tim called. They called like his booking agent. I don't know. It's so funny.
That's pretty brilliant. He must have some good people, though. They talked to him.
Yeah. That was a fun interview. I appreciate Tim could do it. This was round two. Since we had some technical difficulties.
That's true. We tried to get Tim on like really early, didn't we?
Yeah, he was one of the first. Yeah. He was going to be like one of the first comeback episodes.
Yeah. It might have been our first attempt at a Corona episode, I think.
Yeah. And I thought all of them were going to go that badly. I was like, oh my God, what is this website Brad chose?
I was like, this isn't going to work. Going off track is about sitting in a room, but.
Tim just had an ancient computer and couldn't get it going. Luckily, he's got a new MacBook Pro.
And he sounded great.
Good to go.
So,
yeah.
I wanted to tell you that I talked to Steven today and he was like, you guys are fucking rocking it. He's like, been listening to the show. He goes, Jonah's so jealous about getting Chuck Reagan and Milo. And Steven was like, I talked him down. I'm like, he goes, you got to realize it's COVID. People are sitting at home. I was like, I don't know. Benny's doing a good fucking job, dude. But he was really
nice
psyched. He said to say hi and he was like, really, he's really psyched about the show. He says it sounds great.
That's awesome. So. He must be in like Netflix heaven. I can't imagine the kinds of wormholes Steven's gone into with this time, the kinds of nerd wormholes. He'd be proud, though.
He's working.
You know what he'd be proud of?
What's that?
Is I just read my kids, before we went to bed, a really old Captain America and the Falcon fight Spider-Man.
Oh, that was my shit, dude!
Marvel comic. I don't know how old it is, but it looks like a proper old one. It's got the 15 70s. Cent. Yeah, it's
Wait,
got the 15 cent thing.
Oh no, that was
It says 15 cents on the cover. Yeah.
Oh, that was before my time. My comics were like 30 cents, I think.
And it's in pretty bad shape, but we found it at this my kid's real into Spider-Man right now. You know, normal thing.
Yeah, it is.
And we went to this like big antique swap meet kind of thing, and there was a comic vendor, and he saw it and bought it. So yeah, I was just reading Captain America and the Falcon.
That was honestly probably my main comic, Captain America and the Falcon. But
nice.
Yeah, that and Spider-Man.
I just have to cut out the like weird like racial stuff between Captain America and the Falcon.
Is there stuff?
It's not like bad, but they kind of like talk shit to each other that can't explain yet in a good way.
Well, a 15 cent comic must have been like the 60s though, because like,
oh really?
Yeah, because when I was buying them, I think they were 30 cents. That was like the 70s.
I have no reference for this stuff, but it's about 10 bucks now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still,
no
they
bargain.
Love it
anyway.
I mean, speaking of money, comics cost money, kids cost money. Help us on our Patreon
if you
enjoy these episodes.
It's patreon.com/goingofftrack. You can go check it out and see if it's something there that suits you.
And apparently, I haven't listened, but there's a conversation about me talking about lingerie.
Oh, yeah. That was from the last episode.
I don't even remember that conversation.
Yeah, so sometimes...
Did I say anything racy?
No.
Okay.
Not really. It's not as juicy as it sounds. It's funny, though.
Yeah.
It's good.
But, okay, that's good.
Yeah, so we sometimes have these like conversations after we've kind of stopped recording, but I'm still rolling like my own little, like, rolling my Pro Tools here, and it doesn't make it to the main show, but yeah, we put it up on Patreon. We're trying to get some more stuff up there. We've got a few podcasts up there that you can't get anywhere else. But really, it's all about joining the gang, yeah, is what it's really about.
And thanks to Neil, who's a Patreon, who also basically like reminded me that we should get Tim on again.
Like the night
so
before.
He should know. Like, yeah, like he, you know, I had been thinking, I was like, oh, you know what? Maybe Tim got something where I could hit him up again.
Right.
And literally saw Neil's message being like, hey, I have a suggestion. Why don't you try Tim Berry? So it worked out very serendipitously.
It wasn't just a coincidence.
No, it really like sparked my head. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, thanks, so, dude.
Props to Neil.
Yeah.
Who is a very cool dude and on the Patreon. I'm sorry we didn't get your questions in.
Yeah, we didn't have time. He didn't make it in time, but
yeah,
he had to go for a bike ride or something.
Yeah, bike, whatever.
But Tim is available on Instagram.
Available.
You like that?
That was good.
At was good. Underscore Tim underscore Barry underscore.
And, way to be accessible.
And
Tim.
At Twitter, he is Tim Barry RVA, which is all caps on Twitter. Obviously, it doesn't make a difference, but
yeah,
he seems to like it that way. So check out Tim, see what's going on there. You know, give us some good reviews on iTunes if you'd like. You can, if you want to just throw us a tip and don't want to be a patron, it's too much of a commitment, you can always give us some money on Venmo at Off Track. And really, just, you know, like, good reviews are always good, and those are free.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
You know, keep it real.
And I'm into this suggestions for guests. So if anybody who's on the Patreon has some suggestions, somebody you'd want to hear us dig into it with,
yeah,
give us a write. I'll hit anybody up. So I don't care. I'm ruthless like that. So if you say, hey, I'm curious what Carrot Top would say going off track, you know what, I got a couple managers I could hit up, be like, yo, can you get me to Carrot Top? It's possible. I don't know if I'd want to talk. What about Gallagher? Is he still alive? The guy that smashed watermelons?
I have no idea, dude.
I don't know why my head just went to like Las Vegas comics. Elaine Boozler. What's another Las Vegas comic from the 80s? Stephen Wright, that guy who barely said anything.
Oh, I love that guy. He was pretty brilliant.
He was fun. Yeah.
He didn't really last because people kind of picked up on his thing, but when he first started doing that, he was pretty amazing.
I would love, if anybody's listening, I would love some new comic recommendations. I've hit a wall. The last one I found was that guy Kyle Kinane. He's kind of funny. I don't know where to go. I've been
listening
to the same Dave Chappelle shit like over and over again. I need new material.
You need some new laughs?
I do. I love stand-up. I love listening to stand-up.
Oh, cool. Well,
I hit up our guest Joe Sib for more stand-up recommendations. He didn't answer me.
Oh, he will. Hit him again.
The fuck, Joe?
Come on.
He's not listening to this. You think he's listening?
No.
Joe, if you're listening to it going off track this late, respect on you. Yeah, yeah, I'm going to send you an edible arrangement. Right. I got nothing more interesting to say.
Let's wrap it up.
Let's get out of here. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
You're the best. I love you and admire you.
And the rest of you, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.